a deal between Israel and Hamas.
Celebrations in Gaza as beleaguered residents learned that, at long last, a ceasefire deal has been struck.
Joe Biden says, farewell.
Only in America do we believe anything is possible. Like a kid with a stutter from modest beginnings in Scranton, Pennsylvania, in Claymont, Delaware, sitting behind this desk in the Oval Office.
And security preparations in Eastern Europe.
As Donald Tusk indicated, the security of Ukraine is security of Europe.
Today is Thursday, January 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strope. Today's top story comes from the Middle East. That's where Hamas and Israel have reached a ceasefire that will lead to the release of some hostages held by Hamas and Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. The first phase of the deal also calls for a massive influx of humanitarian aid into Gaza. White House correspondent Anita Powell has the story.
Celebrations in Gaza as beleaguered residents learned that, at long last, a ceasefire deal has been struck. Anxiety in Tel Aviv, where hostages' families waited to learn if their loved ones would be among the first tranche released in the multi-stage deal. And relief in Washington, as President Joe Biden, nearing the final days of his presidency, hailed a three-phase ceasefire deal that ends 15 months of violence, displacement, and anxiety.
Fighting in Gaza will stop, and soon the hostages will return home to their families.
President-elect Donald Trump said on his social media network that he was thrilled by the deal and that his administration would build upon its success to expand the U.S.-mediated Abraham Accords to normalize Arab-Israeli relations. Analysts say Trump's fiery threats last week of all hell breaking loose unless there was a deal before his inauguration may have played a role. Mairet Mabrouk is a senior fellow at the Middle East Institute.
Really, there isn't very much more hell that you could unleash on the current inhabitants of Gaza. They're already in hell. But there's also the feeling that he must have placed some pressure on Prime Minister Netanyahu as well. And this is why we are now moving forward.
And what about the day after? Analysts are not optimistic that the next administration can reach a two-state solution. Jonathan Rua is director of foreign policy at JINSA, the Jewish Institute for National Security of America.
I don't see it under the Trump administration, and that's not squarely a criticism of the Trump administration or anyone else. I think both the Israelis and Palestinians are so far off on making the sort of the hard agreements necessary to achieve a two-state solution.
The deal Qatar's prime minister laid out has three stages. First, the release of an initial 33 hostages over the course of a 42-day ceasefire, and an increased flow of aid into Gaza. Then negotiations begin on the second phase, which aims to bring the conflict to a permanent end, alongside a full Israeli withdrawal and the release of all remaining hostages. And the third phase covers the proverbial day after, Gaza's rebuilding with a new governing and security structure. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Inside Israel, news of the deal was met with relief and cautious optimism. For more, I'm joined by VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
First of all, the Israeli government hasn't officially approved it. That probably won't happen until Thursday. And the deal is supposed to go into effect on Sunday, when the first three hostages will be freed. And of this 33 who are going to be freed in total, although, again, some of those 33, it seems, are not alive any longer. So there's a lot of tension still. Israel has not received a list of who is in that 33. There's all kinds of rumors going around. It's supposed to include women, children, five female soldiers, men over 50, and men under 50 who were very sick. So, you know, it also means that more than 60 hostages will still be in Gaza after the first stage of the deal. And again, Israel doesn't know who's alive, who's not alive. Of the 90 plus who are still there now, 34 have been declared dead. So there's, I think, a lot of tension, a lot of nervousness that it could still fall apart, or that it could start and then stop, or that it'll end after the first stage. So there's kind of relief and nervousness on the Israeli side.
But this is a lot closer than we've been before to actually ceasing the hostilities.
Yes, but in the past, if you remember, a month after the war started in November, there was a similar ceasefire deal, and after a week it collapsed. So I think Israel is nervous. There, you know, Israel in some ways did not achieve its goals in Gaza, which was to destroy Hamas completely and to get the hostages out. So now we seem to be moving towards that second goal. But I think for a lot of Israelis, until the all of the hostages are home, it won't really be over. For Palestinians, Gaza has been almost completely destroyed. And then when you start to think about rebuilding Gaza, it's going to take years, if not decades.
Have you heard from anyone inside Gaza or inside other occupied territories about their thoughts?
So Palestinians in Gaza are very happy. They're relieved. They want the war to end. A Hamas official, Khalil al-Hayya, gave a televised address a little while ago in which he said that the Israeli military had not achieved its goals in Gaza. Hamas is sort of seeing this as a victory.
So given that Hamas is seeing it as a victory because they're still around, right, as you said, Hamas hasn't been eradicated. What was it that convinced Israel to take the deal before their objectives were finished?
First of all, Hamas has not been destroyed, but it's been really weakened. I mean, Hamas today is not the same Hamas that was able to invade Israel. Israel will retain some kind of security zone along the border between Gaza and Israel. And I think Israel feels in some ways that Hamas and Iran and Hezbollah can no longer pose the kind of military threat that they could. And in that sense, it's a victory. And I think that there was just a growing public sense as well that it was the responsibility of the Israeli government to bring home the hostages almost at any price.
VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. Linda, thanks for your reporting. Thanks for your time.
Sure. Thank you, Steve.
As we've heard, the war between Israel and Hamas has been going on for nearly 16 months. In that time, Muslim American anger at the Biden administration's support for Israel became a powerful political force in the November election. For reaction to the deal and the politics going forward, I'm joined by Nihad Awad, Executive Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations.
I'm overjoyed to see the prospect of saving lives and ending the genocide and the destruction of Palestinian lives and properties, which we have been seeing on a daily basis for over a year with the complicity of our own government.
And what do you see happening next?
Well, it's a long path forward, but definitely my concern here is really about my own government, the U.S. government, which has supplied, facilitated, armed, and justified this carnage with American diplomacy, with American weapons. Every fighter jet that dropped a bomb, it happened, and they happened because of the willingness and persistence of President Biden and his team. And I commend President-elect Donald Trump for pushing for this ceasefire deal and reportedly even warning Benjamin Netanyahu that Israel too would face consequences for continuing to refuse to make a deal. I hope that our own government will pay attention to take care of the American people, of the struggling American families, and not divert more billions of dollars to a genocidal state. But unfortunately, the priority spendings of this administration has hurt not only innocent people abroad, but it has deprived American people at home from living a peaceful life. Secondly, it is important to allow the Palestinian people to go back to their homes and to allow humanitarian aid to flow into Gaza, including clean water, and food supplies and medicine, and to help rebuild their infrastructure, to build their hospitals, their schools.
I wanted to touch on something that you brought up, and that's the difference between the Biden and the Trump administrations here in the U.S. Muslim Americans became a really potent force against Joe Biden in the election because of his support for Israel. Are you saying that President Trump would not have supported Israel the same way, or wouldn't have gotten your support the same way?
We cannot judge hypothetical. 1 year and a few months of carnage could have been prevented, and I cannot imagine how any president can justify supporting the killing and maiming and destroying of civilian lives. Joe Biden has done it. If, to your question, if Donald Trump was there, I'm not sure. But the fact that Donald Trump, even before he became president, has pushed for this ceasefire deal to take place, and he was able to pressure Benjamin Netanyahu, I think it is something to be commended. I've never thought that I would ever say a positive word about Donald Trump because of his policies. But as a Muslim, as a human being, I have to thank people when they do good. And for that, I commend him and I thank him for his effort to bring this ceasefire deal to become a reality.
The way the deal stands now, it seems that Hamas stays in control in Gaza. Do you think that's a positive step going forward as well?
Who are we to tell the Palestinians who they should choose for their leaders? The problem is not with Hamas. The problem is with the occupation. Hamas came as a result of the Israeli occupation. Before Hamas came to being in 1987, there was an Israeli occupation. There were Israeli settlements. There was ethnic cleansing. There has been apartheid. So Israel just faces the consequences of its occupation, and people should not blame the Palestinians for whichever leaders they choose to represent them.
And we'll leave it there for today. Nihad Awad is the National Executive Director for CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Mr. Awad, thanks so much for your time and what is no doubt a very busy evening for you.
Thank you very much.
Late Wednesday in Washington, President Joe Biden gave his farewell address from the Oval Office, capping his decades-long political career.
I've always believed, and I've told other world leaders, America can be defined by one word, possibilities. Only in America do we believe anything is possible. Like a kid with a stutter from modest beginnings in Scranton, Pennsylvania, in Claymont, Delaware, sitting behind this desk in the Oval Office as President of the United States.
For a look at what was said and what wasn't, I'm joined by VOA's White House Bureau Chief, Patsy Wita-Kuswara. Hi, Patsy. So what did President Biden say?
Well, the thing that struck me the most from his farewell address was that he left the nation with a warning. He warned of what he said was the dangerous concentration of power in the hands of a very few ultra wealthy people, the dangerous consequences if their abuse of power is left unchecked. And he said that today an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that threatens democracy and our basic rights and freedom. Now, he did not mention or explain who he meant by oligarchy, but as we know, some of the nation's biggest billionaires, including Elon Musk, have forged close ties with President-elect Donald Trump. And President Biden also, without naming anyone, made a jab at the recent decision by Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg that the social media company, which owns Facebook and Instagram, stop working with fact checkers. And he warned that the free press is crumbling, errors are disappearing, social media is giving up on fact checking, and that the truth is smothered by lies told for power and for profit.
So typically, speeches like this are a list of highlights of his achievements in office. And as you said, he left us with a warning about what he sees coming down the road, but he did talk about his achievements. Particularly the Israel-Hamas deal that we mentioned earlier on Wednesday. What did he say his administration accomplished?
Well, yes. I mean, this was certainly something that he ended his term on a high note on foreign policy, right? I mean, just hours earlier, he was also speaking from the White House, announcing that Israel and Hamas have reached a ceasefire and hostage agreement in Gaza. And in his farewell speech, he said that the deal will largely be implemented by the incoming Trump administration. And he said that he has instructed his team to keep them fully informed, because that's how it should be, working together as Americans. But this is certainly a highlight for the Biden administration, as he just has days left before he leaves the White House.
VOA's White House Bureau Chief, Patsy Wita-Kuswara. Patsy, thanks for your reporting tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And here are some more stories we're following from around the world.
The wildfires in and around Los Angeles remain hard to control amid high winds, but firefighters are making progress, and the fires haven't spread very much over the past couple of days. Altogether, the wildfires in the Los Angeles area have burned roughly 164 square kilometers and damaged or destroyed more than 12,000 structures. At least 25 people are dead and 30 are missing. At least 82,000 people are under evacuation orders.
Pam Bondi, President-elect Donald Trump's pick for Attorney General, has sought to reassure Democratic senators that her Justice Department would not prosecute anyone for political purposes. But at her confirmation hearing Wednesday, she also refused to rule out the potential for investigations into adversaries of the Republican president-elect. The often testy hearing centered on concerns that Trump would seek to use the Justice Department's law enforcement powers to exact retribution, as he said he would, against opponents, including investigators who investigated him. Democrats pressed her on whether she could maintain the department's independence from the White House and say no to the president if asked to do something unethical.
South African police say they have ended a rescue operation at an abandoned gold mine where scores of illegal miners were trapped. Authorities say they believe they rescued all the survivors and retrieved the bodies of all who died. The announcement Wednesday was a surprise. It came just a day after the police minister said the rescue operation would likely last until at least next week. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Turning now to American politics, U.S. consumer prices increased slightly more than expected in December. But what does that mean for the Federal Reserve's projections for fewer interest rate cuts in the coming year? Reuters' Lisa Bernard has the story.
U.S. inflation data out Wednesday showed consumer prices ticked up more than expected in December amid higher gas prices. The Labor Department's Consumer Price Index rose 0.4% last month, slightly more than economists polled by Reuters had expected, putting the annual inflation rate at 2.9%. But the so-called core CPI, which excludes volatile food and energy costs, was 3.2%, down from the month before and better than the forecast. That helped lift the stock market on Wednesday. Traders were pricing in nearly even odds that the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates twice by the end of 2025, with the first reduction to come in June. No rate cut is expected at the Fed's January policy meeting. Last year, the central bank forecast four rate cuts for 2025, but later scaled back that prediction to two. Fed policymakers see some of the proposed policies of President-elect Donald Trump as inflationary, such as broad tariffs on imported goods and mass deportations of undocumented immigrants.
Lisa Bernard of Reuters reporting for us today.
Over to Europe now. Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky held a press conference in Warsaw on Wednesday to discuss not only security against Russia in the region, but also accused Russia of planning terrorism on international airlines. VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gengadze was at the press conference.
So the accusations that Russia, a major world power, would use terrorism on airlines, did they say what the supposed plans were? And was there any indication of how close those plans were to becoming a reality?
No, the Donald Tusk, the prime minister of Poland, did not really give much specifics. However, he said Poland played a key role in Europe in counteracting act of sabotage and diversion, which Russia organized not only on Polish territory. Some acts of sabotage or a preparation for diversion in his ward were very dramatic. He said he would not go into details about this latest information, but he said, I can confirm the validity of these fears that Russia was planning act on air terror, and not only against Poland, but against airlines all over the world. Prime Minister said that the act of sabotage, and again, I quote, different version of the war that Russia has declared against the entire civilized world, not just Ukraine, require joint action. And that his word was actually directed to kind of galvanize this support specifically for Ukraine to fight Russian aggression. However, he indicated that whole Central and Eastern Europe specifically is under attack at this time.
So in terms of potential peace talks with Ukraine, what has the discussion been about security guarantees?
As Donald Tusk indicated, the security of Ukraine is security of Europe. And the best security guarantees for Ukraine and for Europe as a whole would be Ukraine joining EU institutions and NATO. There are a lot of talks about different type of security guarantees, and I was able to actually ask President Zelensky about it. He gave us a long list of important issues that he would like to address during the peace talk and after the peace talk. But again, the best security guarantees, he said, in NATO membership. Donald Tusk, in his words, said, yes, we think that NATO membership for Ukraine would be the most important. However, we see that West is not ready for that yet. So we are trying to create the system that would give Ukraine a security and give Europe security that actually we are craving and we need at this time of crisis in Europe. In addition, President Zelensky was very forceful, saying that the discussion about the making Ukrainian army smaller, as Russia apparently demanding that Ukrainian army should be smaller, if there would be a possibility for the peace talk, he said there is no way he could consider anything on that front. And he said the best security guarantee for Ukraine at this point is Ukrainian army as well.
Miroslava Gengadze, Eastern European Bureau Chief for VOA, thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.
Then the political drama continues in Seoul. South Korean authorities detained impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol early Wednesday. It ends a weeks-long standoff over the current status of Yoon, who is being investigated for insurrection related to his declaration of martial law. VOA's Bill Gallo has the latest in Seoul.
Supporters of impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol scuffled with police outside his residence in central Seoul, but they could do little to stop the overwhelming number of police who entered Yoon's compound early Wednesday. After several hours of negotiations with Yoon and his legal team, the deadlock broke without violence. Yoon left in a motorcade, maintaining a presidential image despite the circumstances. He is the first sitting South Korean president to be detained. Yoon, accused of insurrection, faces questions over his martial law decree last month. In a pre-recorded video message, Yoon was defiant. He said such repeated illegal actions and coercive procedures based on invalid warrants are deeply deplorable. Authorities can detain Yoon for 48 hours before seeking a formal arrest warrant. But the insurrection probe isn't the only trouble Yoon faces. The country's constitutional court is also set to soon rule on his impeachment, a verdict that could remove him from office. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
That'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Thanks for listening.